Oh, I wonder, you know, what effect that's gonna have on their game plan, you know? I wonder if they'll play better, you know what I mean? It's one of those type of things where they get fired
Right.
up. Who knows? Do you care if I bring up my little my little idea for the league?
No, go ahead.
Well, you know, you guys listening, you know, I have some ideas that I think, you know, pretty much kind of no-brainers, and I don't know why they wouldn't implement them, you know. And you guys might have heard these ideas tossed around before. I haven't really heard too many people say them at all. You know, with interleague play, I think interleague play is great. I'm still fascinated by it. I like seeing the matchups. I like playing National League teams. Honestly, I watch National League baseball at night a lot. For some reason, I like National League baseball because I don't get to see it in person. So my theory is, you know, when these other teams come, right? Let's say your team's the Mets, Justin, and they come to Fenway Park. Why don't we play the Mets rules? Why don't we
Yep.
play the National League style? That way, all the fans that are in Boston can see our pitchers
I
hit and
agree.
see us play by the different rules. If we're gonna do it anyways, now when we play the Mets, if we're gonna do it, we're gonna play two series anyways. We're gonna play one there and one
Right.
here. So let's just flip the rules around, and then we can see our pitchers hit and play National League style in our home ballpark where we never get to see it. And then the same thing in your ballpark, you get to play by the American League rules, and you know,
Right.
and the fans over there get to see something new. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. I don't know why they don't do it. They're gonna play the same amount of games, and they're gonna play the same amount of games under each set of rules. Why not flip it to the other team's park? I think that would be, you know, I don't know. I think that'd be really cool. What do you
I
think?
totally agree. I totally agree with you. I think we talked about this before. I think that'd be a great change, to be made in baseball. I think that would totally, like you said, it'd be for you guys to see Lester hitting and have to pinch hit him, or whatever. I know it happens, but it'd be different too, just to see,
Yeah.
if you get higher scoring games. In Citi Field because of it, or if you get a lower scoring game in Fenway because of it,
Exactly.
I think that a lot of times I think it would help show the parity between the two leagues as
Yes, it
well
would
too.
even out the home field advantage also.
Right,
Because
exactly.
you're playing by the other team's rules, but in your ballpark,
Right.
so it makes it more even.
Right, exactly. So say you guys come and play us, now we have to see Big Poppy. As for when we wouldn't have to see him before, so actually, like you said, you actually might, you're going to see the American League teams winning more on the road there, and the National League, and vice
Yeah,
versa.
I think it'd be wicked cool, man. I think they should all do it. I'm not a fan, you know. I'm not a fan of the All-Star game deciding the home field advantage in the World Series. I think that's dumb. I think it's dumb. I love the All-Star game. I do. I think out of all the All-Star games, the Major League Baseball game is by far the one that intrigues me the most. I think the NBA one is second. I think the football one's crap, and you know, I think the hockey one's pretty good
Right.
sometimes. I like watching the skills thing and stuff. I definitely like the hockey, you know, pregame stuff more than the basketball. There's like the slam dunk contest and the 3-point. I don't like that anymore. It's garbage now, you know. It used to be
Yeah,
fun, but.
basketball to me in general, I don't know. I don't get me wrong, I'll watch a Knicks game here and there. I do like college a little bit, college basketball, because I'll tell you why. Because when you watch the pro games, there's a few
Bunch
teams,
of
don't get me wrong,
individuals.
right, exactly. That's all they do is drive up the court and shoot it. Drive up, you're not seeing it where it used to be, where you used to have to, three or four passes before a shot. All you're seeing is a guy drive the lane, either gets called for a charge or a block, and then he's on the foul line. Or he kicks it out. I don't know. I'd like to see a lot more team ball being played. And I'll
Yeah,
tell
I.
you why. Real quick, I'll just get this out there, then you could expound. And I think the reason why is because we have all these kids coming up getting drafted out of high school. And I think that it's
That is the
ruined
problem. They need a
college.
better developmental league. They need like a minor league basketball.
I agree.
They
You
do.
know,
I mean, it's.
but here's the thing though, Bri. Would those teams go and put these, the thing with basketball is it's not like football or baseball to where, it once you're up there with height and a certain skill level, it's not like football where you'll get beat up coming, out of high school. Basketball is a team, is a sport where if they've been able to still do, so you're not going to see them putting their Kobe Bryants in the minors or whatever, But it's really something to think about. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, they did try to address it by making people have to stay in school now. and making the age limit. I mean, they did kind of address it like that. I mean, I think you are going to see that kind of you're going to see the benefits from that. I think we got to give that a little time. I think we need to give that a little time. I think we're kind of forgetting about that a little bit. And
you are right about that.
Yeah, I think that makes a big difference. I think a few years ago, yeah, but I think now where kids have to be like at least sophomores in college before they come out or whatever. I think that makes
be 20 years old, right?
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference. But you know, there's always a negative, and I do think you know. Then you get into the argument. Well, who the hell are they to tell an 18-year-old man that needs to support his family that he can't earn a living?
Right.
I mean, it really does. You know, if you're that good, I mean, why can't you?
I do agree. I don't know. You know, that's kind of a more of a libertarian type argument to say.
Yeah,
it's hard to
I
say.
Couldn't help it.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, but for the sanctity of the game, it's, you know, you have to wonder now. All right, well, here let's get into something else then. Considering this was talked about on Real Sports this week. Considering how much revenue these college players bring in for their team, should college players be paid? And if so, how much on a scale of what they're actually bringing in?
I think with the none of the universe, I mean, this is a hard thing for me to answer because originally, you know, I want to say no, I don't think they should be paid, but the universities take such advantage of the situation. I mean, they make so much money off the kids, and the kids don't make anything. And then when the kids make anything, it's like, you know, all these fines and sanctions and everything else. I don't know, man. I'd have to look into it a little more. I don't know what how would they do it? Would they do it on like revenue by how much merchandise and tickets and everything your particular school sold, and then they'd split it up amongst the players, or would they do like a revenue sharing with the whole conference where they'd all share it evenly? What kind of ideas get thrown out there?
Well, from what I'm hearing right now, what we're seeing is that they're gonna go with something like $2,000 to $5,000 per player, which to me is not going to stop the corruption of them getting paid under the table, for coming to schools, and it's not going to stop much. So I think that it needs to be more than that, and I think it needs to be based on, you know, like maybe do it like this to where you know, you're allowed to play a certain amount of players. Say, you know, 30 grand to see, you know, something like that. It's got to be something
doesn't
realistic.
Doesn't that just turn the university and the college game into minor league football?
It does, but at the same time, these players are already getting paid, a lot of them. They're already getting duffel bags full of cash for attending.
You're right. Let's not demonize them any longer. Might as well just make it legal for them.
It's just like marijuana prohibition. You know it's gonna happen.
I mean, think how hard it is being one of them kids to say no to a bags of cash like that.
Of course.
I mean, how do you say no to that? I mean, I don't even. You know.
Yeah, your mother's living in the projects. You know, you got a skill out that people are willing to pay millions of dollars for, and you got to wait 2 years. You know, so I mean, it's tough. So why not? You know, give them a little. You know, here $50,000 or $30,000 something, you know, for each season played, as an or maybe even put it in a trust, you know, put part in a trust fund or do something. But, you know, and again, you know, we're coming on to, you know, onto personal rights and everything. But you know, I don't know, it's something to think about because $2,000 to $5,000 is not going to stop what we're seeing. It may help a couple players that aren't getting paid, which I would like to see, but it's not going to stop the blue chip guys, the guys that are leaving early. But here's the thing: these teams are bringing home hundreds of millions of dollars between revenue, bowl games, conference sharing. You know, all this money, and the players are the ones that are generating it. Why should the coach make $10 million a year and the players get nothing, you know?
Well, I don't know. Maybe because when you agree to go to school there, it's kind of like signing into a contract. And you go, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe that's kind of how they look at it. I don't know.
Right. Well, that is how they look at it. Like, well, you're already getting a free education out of it, is how they're looking at it.
Yeah.
But the thing that it is, though, is you know, that guy is not there for an education. Most of them are not there for an education. Don't get me wrong. Maybe I'd say – if you looked at a Division I school, I'd probably say 50% of the players are there, and realize they're not going to make it to the NFL, or that they have a very outside shot of making it to the NFL. You know, and the other 50%, are either NFL or bust, you know, and those guys that don't make it out of the NFL or bust are going to have nothing to fall back on. I don't know. It's a really tough conversation to have, but I think it's one that needs to start. You know, I think they have started the dialogue on it, but I think it needs to go a little further and see how we can work this.
Well, I'm going to ask this. This is such a this question is probably going to get such a long response out of you, but and this is the reason, and I feel it's a reason for a lot of people. The reason I don't watch college football is because that whole BCS thing is bullshit. I hate how they just select teams. I hate that teams like Boise State can't play any of these other teams. I hate that teams can pick who they play. I hate that three teams can be undefeated and they can't decide who the champion is. It makes me think it's all illegitimate, and I don't want to watch it. And if they had a playoff system, Justin, and they were playing off in the playoffs right now, I'd sit here and watch it.
I agree. Here's what you do. You know, each team plays, what, 13 games? Make a 10-game season? And then actually have, you know, have the top player, the top teams in each division face off. And then, you know, and then just like that, have like a round robin 32 team tournament.
You have to. I don't see how they don't. It's so ridiculous.
It really is. It really is.
It is ridiculous.
You could do it just like the NCAA does it, and everyone would get a shot. But here's the thing. You would have... You know, you would have your lesser divisions, you know, only getting one team, you know, per the division leader goes, you know, but and I don't say 64 because that might be, you know, that's one more game. But hey,
there's a lot of schools, man. I think you need it 64. I mean, there's a lot of schools. You know, I think it's total bull. And I've seen years, and I don't watch college football, but I, you know, pay attention to some of it a little bit. And I've seen years where teams have been in the championship game with one loss, and there's been other teams that have had no losses, and they're not even in the championship game. How does that even work? That's absolutely boggles my mind, dude.
I know.
That boggles my mind. It's like F you. We don't care that you're undefeated and you don't get to play in the championship game.
I know. It's insane. You have a few years ago, I think it was LSU and Michigan
and USC, Alabama, I think. Wasn't it? Alabama was claiming the title even though they didn't play in the championship game. It was one of those teams.
Michigan was claiming. I think it was Michigan claiming the title. I don't know. Some way it worked out. But yeah, it was... You had the national championship game. Both teams had a loss, and you had the team that won the third and fourth place team game that had no losses. You know, so I mean, it just I don't know. The whole BCS thing is garbage. I totally agree with you there, and I think that they would have a lot more people watching.
Take the competitive nature out of it. I mean, it really makes a casual fan never want to become anything more than a casual fan. Not even a casual fan. I'm just an outside observer. Let's say it makes an outside observer that's a sports fan that's not into college not want to watch it, because if they had a playoff system and I thought, hey, this is all legit, all the best teams get a shot. I mean, maybe the way they're ranked and they're seeded might be screwed up, but at least they're in a tournament and they all get a chance, and they can't even do that. I mean, like, why don't they? I mean, the basketball gets it right. I mean, how is it that hard? Why can't they just, you know, take an example?
And
the basketball
thing is huge.
And people love it.
Exactly.
They'll bring in just as much money as they will from these bowl games. They'll take over a whole few towns, and they'll have regionals, then they'll take over another city at the end, and they'll be down there for weeks, and it'll be awesome.
Exactly. Just make the team the bowl, you know, because we have these bowl games that have gone on forever, or whatever. Just make those cities the hosts of these tournaments, and that's all you do. And the lesser ones, okay, you know, the ones that, you know, because now there's 40 something bowl games. You know, you have the Trojan Condom, or not even, you know. Or,
oh, my God, you have the crazy, you'll have the something.com bowl, like something you've never heard of.
Exactly.
Like, it's wicked stupid, dude, wicked stupid.
I agree. I don't know, something needs to give there, though, because I've lost my interest in college football as well because of it. You know, between that and, you know, and just a few of the other... You know, and one thing, college is a lot to like, too, because, I mean, you get to see offenses that you never see in the NFL. You get to see, you know, Wing T and you know, Full House backfields and Wishbone.
Now, how come they just never translate to the pro game? Why don't they ever use those formations in the pro game? Because guys are just too fast in the defense that they'll intercept it and stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah. The thing is you run those triple option offenses and stuff. It's meant to make a defensive for one, the quarterbacks are usually not fast enough, and they don't want their quarterbacks getting hit. When you run the triple option, you're making the defensive end. If he goes after the quarterback, you pitch it. Your first thing, see the triple option. Here's the thing, your first option is a give to the fullback right up the middle out of the eye. You can run it out of any formation, but the triple, you know, it run out of the eye. You give it to the fullback if he has it right up the middle. If not, then your next option is to run it, you know, like a sweep, and it depends where the defensive end goes. If the defensive end bites in the quarterback, then you pitch it. If the defensive end bites in the running back, then he keeps it.
That's too risky in the NFL. The defensive players are way too fast.
And hit too hard. So, I mean, you're gonna have a safety playing up or a linebacker playing up, but he's going to get a head-on-head collision with one of your quarterbacks. And Tebow was doing a little bit of it last year. There's a few quarterbacks that, you know, Vince Young was doing a little bit when they were running the Wildcat when he was with Tennessee still. And, you know, a few teams were doing it. Edelman did it here and there with the Patriots. But it's not something that it doesn't translate very well. I don't understand, though, why you don't see more like Wishbone. And I think the reason why maybe is because same reason where you have these weird like Wing T or Wishbone where – it relies a lot on deception, and I think in the NFL you have these guys are so fast and so smart, so athletic that they can even get beat and still make it back and make the tackle, you know, like on a counter play or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, teams every now and then you'll see somebody break into a three running back backfield or something, but it's not, you know, I guess also too in the NFL you just stack the box. But I don't know why that doesn't work in college because some teams are very successful that do it. I don't know. It's just one of those things, I guess, that it's all about the personnel. And like I said, most NFL quarterbacks are way too important to be running, you know, running around the corner there.
Yeah, it's way too dangerous. It's way too dangerous. I'm pretty excited about this weekend, though, coming up for the football games. I can't wait to watch them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's definitely going to be interesting. And, you know, even the two games that neither of us care about, I think it's, you know, a lot of teams that we didn't expect. Obviously, I expected San Fran, expected New Orleans. But I didn't expect the Broncos to make it this far. Didn't expect the Giants to make it this far. And the Niners have been, you know, even though you expected them all year, you know, you have a surprise team with the Niners. The Niners, I think, are the wild card here as to you know, if they're the real deal or not, and we're gonna see on Saturday.
Oh yeah, I mean, Jesus, if they beat New Orleans, I mean, they could do anything. I mean, you know,
exactly.
They've proven themselves. I mean, I think if they beat New Orleans, I mean, they might even become the Super Bowl favorite.
I agree. I think
with that defense, if they prove they can hold up against an offense like that,
right? That's the main thing here too. And you have a great front seven with them. You have you even have a good secondary with them too. You know, they have great safeties, Goldson and I forget the other guy's name, but either way, both big, you know, both big hitters, both, you know, it's like having extra, you know, speedy linebackers on the field.
It's but I think never it's, easy it's, to it's go into Lambeau though. Never easy to go into Lambeau. Never.
Nope. And it's gonna be loud. It's gonna be cold. It's gonna be, you know, Wisconsin.
They got some of the most passionate football fans right there.
Well. And you got to love it, too, because, you know, the way that they have it to where, you know, pretty much there's no main owner. Everybody kind of has a say in it, the shareholders type thing. I like that community idea.
That's awesome, you know, man.
It really is. I think that that's shown how it can work in it, you know, and a team can be successful. Now, could you imagine if something like that was happening with the Mets? It's not, you know, it really bothers me here being a Mets fan. Is all these years now, say like this year, okay, you know, we've had our bumps and bruises the past couple of years, but if the Wilpons were not our owner and we had any other owner in the world, we would be out there spending $140 million at least on salary cap. The fact that the Mets are going to go into 2012 season at around 105, 110 is disgusting to me. The fact that, how much revenue they can make if they actually put a team out there, you know, and it's not that far away. If we were just to go and sign, if we had just gone and signed, like, say, a Bertolle, you know, or any of these marquee pitchers, and then, you know, one of these hitters that was out there, you know, at least you're giving the fans some hope, you know, and I think that that would be enough to fill the seats up. You know, could you imagine if the Mets went out and well, it just re-signed Reyes for one, and then went out and got, you know, got a couple pitchers. You know, I think that the fans would be really really excited about the season.
Doesn't it piss you off when they go down in salary? I get heated when the Sox have done that a few times.
Yeah,
I can't stand it. There's no reason for it, and they have the highest ticket prices in the whole world out of anybody.
That's what I'm saying. When you're talking about the you know, two big markets like the Boston and New York market, and you're talking about, you know, teams that, you know, there's no reason that they can't be up there in the top of spending. And, you know, I know spending doesn't exactly equal championships, but it does help. You know, let's be real. You're not going to do anything with a $70 million team. I know that the Rays did it a few years ago and whatever, you know.
The best you can hope to be is like the Oakland days if you play that type of ball, and you'll never get anywhere. I mean, you might make the playoffs a few times. That's about it.
Yeah, and you're always rebuilding, you know. I mean, I wonder about the Oakland fans and even the Pittsburgh fans, really.
They must be depressed, dude. They never re-sign anybody.
Nope.
They're always rebuilding. Like you said, they're always rebuilding. Yeah, they got a great farm system. We get it. But can you re-sign some of you guys?
Yeah. Here's you know, and that's Billy Beane for you over in Oakland. Yeah. Now, you know, he's been talked about how great he is. But look at how many pitchers – great pitchers that he's developed, and they're gone. You know, as soon as they get good, like just like now, Trevor Cahill, Gio Gonzalez, both gone. Yep. Now you had a great rotation last year, and you go and get rid of two out of your three best guys. Of course, Brett Anderson's good too; he's still there. But you know, you get rid of two out of your three best guys. I know they have, you know, some other guys behind them, but those guys would be just as good as you know, waiting in the wings. Or you know, as your long guy or whatever, there's always a spot for you, and I think that these teams that go out there and try to win with $80 million caps are just wrong to the fans that go out and spend the money.
What do you think should happen? You think there should be a hard cap?
I think that there needs to be something. I think there needs to be.
It needs to be a minimum. I think you have to spend at least a certain amount. If we're doing revenue sharing, that's unbelievable. Totally, if you don't spend all your money, it makes me so mad.
I totally agree, because you have these teams every year, and now here's the thing: Selig was one of them too with the Brewers. Brewers are finally spending now, the past few years. But you had a team with the Brewers though, for all those years under Selig that would just go every single year. And just make $10 million, you know, $10 million or whatever it was off the, you know, and just stand pat instead of making $100 million.
They weren't in it to win; they were in it for profit, and that's it.
Right, right. And instead of taking a shot, but who ended up winning? A guy like Steinbrenner, who went out and spent, went out and spent billions, and then went and spent hundreds of millions, and it turned into billions.
Well, here's the gripe that I would have as an owner, okay? You have, and this is, I know you knew what I was talking about, but in case the listeners didn't, you know, you have all these teams selling all this merchandise and stuff, and they're going to share the money, okay? So right. You have a team like the Red Sox or the Yankees that obviously sell a ton of merchandise compared to somebody like Milwaukee, okay? And then you have Milwaukee, now they don't even go out and spend anywhere near the salary cap, and they just pocket a bunch of money, let their team tank it, make a profit, and then they still get the same percentage for merchandise that you do. And that would piss me off.
Totally.
I think there needs to be a floor. Like, there's a ceiling, there needs to be a floor.
Yep. I agree, and I think that, you know, that when we do that, we can also maybe introduce a cap as well. You know, maybe have it go up every year, because baseball, there's not too much of a problem with it, although I do see there's a problem when you have a team like the Yankees paying.
You should do like 1 to 150, right? And 100 minimum, 150 max. I think that would be a good, you know, we could screw it a little bit, but something to that effect.
Right, right. Well, let's keep it to how it is now. Let's make it 100 minimum, 180 max. That way, the Yankees really, you know, and give them a couple of years to, you know, to straighten it out and maybe have something to where you can I don't know, you know, maybe sign another guy and it won't go against your.
No, and you have it like this. Any teams that are over that cap number right now, all the contracts you already have are good. I mean, you can't expect them to have to work numbers and change their books with contracts with guys that are signed by bringing in cheaper guys. I mean, that's not fair. So if you're going to change the cap and they already locked up players for, say, 3 or 4 years and they're going to be at $190 million instead of $180, then so be it. I mean, they already got the guys signed. I think that's what they should do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever the highest paid team is right now, say, you know, which obviously is the Yankees, and say, what do they make? What are they, 205, 210?
Yeah.
Well, let's make that the cap then, and that way, you know, there's nothing to worry about. You mean to tell me that you don't have a few salaries that are coming off the books anyway, and, you know, when Jeter and Posada's retiring this year, and hey, that's another thing too I wanted to get into real quick.
Oh, me too. I do. I want to talk about retirement, Hall of Fame, definitely. What do you got?
Well, I just want to talk about real quick. Posada just retired now, and I wanted to know your thoughts about Veritek, Wakefield too. You know, the fact that they aren't a part of the Boston's plans this year, as they have Lavarnaway is going to be the backup catcher.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as far as, you know, Wakefield's the odd man out, where Bard is going to, you know, probably be that guy that can either be the long guy, a Seves too, the starter or reliever. You know, so, I mean, it makes you wonder, as longtime Red Sox loyalists, these guys have won you two titles. I don't know. How do you feel about Tech? I mean, should they sign him for another year as a Or do you let him go and say
what, should they sign him because he's been their captain or whatever and he was here for the titles and all that? No. I think that's an absurd way to think. That's a bad business way to think. I think if there's value in having him stick around and you think it's enough value where this thing where he's this great catcher and he's coaching people and all this, if you think that's valuable enough and that's the reason, then yes. But just on merit alone because he did something for you in the past, I don't think you could sign guys on that.
Well, you know what I was thinking for something like Veritek, and I think that we haven't seen this since the 80s, but you remember when they used to have player managers?
Yep.
Pete Rose did it for a little while. Tony Perez did it, I believe, too.
Yep.
I think that would be perfect for a guy like him. Not make him the manager, obviously, but make him a player coach, and that way you can have him. You don't even have to have him on your lineup at all time in your 25-man roster, but that way if your catcher gets hurt,
Well, why are other teams going to let that fly? That's not really fair to them.
But it is because I mean it there's no rule against it. If you want to sign him, and you know I don't think there's any rules against that. I don't see that being a problem. I just don't see it ever. I don't see it happening for one. I don't see him swallowing his pride for two.
You don't think, honestly, though, that we're not talking about an outfielder. We're talking about carrying an extra catcher but not having him count against your roster. You don't think other teams are going to be pretty upset about that? I think they would.
No. Here's the thing. He's not on your roster, though. The whole thing is he can't play in your game that day. However, if your guy gets hurt, you can then sign him. You know, you can then sign him to a player contract.
Okay.
You know,
all
type
right.
thing.
Yeah.
Keeping your options open. No. Yeah. No. You. No way about it. Can he come into a game? You know, being the 26th man. No. That's
okay,
total bullshit.
But
what
really,
I'm saying is being, you know, as a player coach and somehow working it out to where it's either a weekly contract that he signs, you know, in good faith or whatever. Or a contract for both, you know. I don't know, but
I like the guy. I mean, I think it's a good idea. I haven't even heard. You know, nobody around here has thrown that idea around. People have talked about, you know, signing him. People have talked about him being some sort of coach. Nobody said player manager. I mean, I like the idea.
Yeah, or player coach. You know,
I mean, but what about Wakefield? I mean, Wakefield. If they don't need him, I mean, they don't need him. I mean,
yeah. Wakefield is a different story too. I mean, Wakefield has played for other teams.
Yeah, what are you going to pay him forever?
He's not Veritek, where he's a captain. He's not,
yeah.
He's not, you know, Wakefield, he can go by the wayside. And, you know, of course, you're going to bring him back every time you have the 2004, 2007 teams come out or whatever. But, you know, as far as that goes, you know, good riddance. If someone wants to pick you up, to be a long reliever.
Yeah, me and my mother had this talk. She's like, I know, she was talking about, this is just like a year or two ago. She's like, oh, I wish they never let Pedro go, and we still had him. And I'm like, Ma, it was his time. You know, he was this unbelievable pitcher, but then somehow between 2003 and 2004, a switch flipped, and he got old. And he was totally less effective, and he was a normal human in 2004. Yeah, we won the World Series, but it wasn't just because of him. He did good, but his ERA doubled from what it was. His ERA was low twos, sometimes even in the ones, during the steroid era. That's how nasty that guy was, you know what I mean? He was that good, dude. He was the most unbelievable thing, but when 2003 ended, it all like went downhill after that, you know, after that Grady Little not taking him out in Game 7 against the Yankees and the Aaron Boone thing and all that. And then I don't know if that really affected him a lot and he doesn't want to admit it, or if that's just the same time he physically went down. But they made the right move by letting him go. I had a conversation with my mother and she thinks you just got to pay everybody, you know, keep paying everybody because they did this for you and they did that for you, and pay Ortiz for friggin' sign him for another 5 years. And you can't do that, you know? It's a horrible way. You got to do what's best for the team. And the fans need to understand that. You got to do what's best for the team.
Exactly. And here's the thing, though. You're allowed 25 roster spots. As far as baseball goes, you know, it's a business, and it's also, you know, you can't just keep guys around as a trophy piece, and say, you know, it doesn't work. And I'm wondering now, Veritek, I think does have an offer to be the backup catcher at Tampa Bay, though. I wonder if he's going to go ahead. You know, I don't know if it's concrete, but I know there's a couple teams that have talked to him about, you know, and I think he'd be a great fit anywhere. You know, it just sucks that he wouldn't retire as a Red Sox. Of course, I'm sure they would probably sign him for a day just to make it, you know, they do that. They sign guys for a day at the, you know, but you know, I don't know. I just think that, I mean, here's a guy that, what, he had 12 home runs last year. Yeah. You know, in limited at 200 something at bats.
No, he hit good. He hit good for when he hit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think he's still got a little bit of baseball in him, which does hurt him. But when you have a great prospect like Ryan LaVarnaway behind Salty, and Salty had a great year.
Veritek can't throw anybody out anymore, though, Justin.
No, he can't. He totally can't.
He can't. They run on him like crazy.
The only thing he's good for is handling the pitching staff, which, you know, and hitting a few dingers.
He's great at stuff like blocking the plate and stuff like that, too, but he can't throw people out anymore. I mean, they run like crazy on him. And that's no good for a catcher. I mean, he's
yeah, trust me.
Those days are gone.
I suffered through the Piazza years of catching. You know, Piazza was obviously
one of the best ever.
I will say, one of the best offensive catchers of all time. Next, they're up to Johnny Bench.
Yeah.
And Carlton Fisk. And here's a guy, that couldn't throw out his grandmother stealing second base. But you know, what could you do of being a National League team? I don't know. I'm surprised. Here's another guy. I'm surprised he didn't try to go to the AL and try to DH for a few years. Probably would have padded his stats a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised about that. You know. Well, we're on baseball. It's something I want to talk about. It was kind of bothering me today, and I want to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame, some of the Hall of Fame voters and people that have their vote, and I want to know how some of these. I have a real gripe with some baseball writers. I think just the thought process for some of them is absurd. You have guys like Roberto Alomar, okay. Now, when people talk about guys like that, you know, a lot of people think, you know, he might not get in. And just today I hear that Bill Miller. Now, Bill Miller is a guy that was on the Red Sox for about 2 years. He's a nice little player. I mean, he's not even like an all-star player. I mean, he's a good hitter. He was a switch hitter, and he did some nice things for us. Do you know that there's some writers that actually put him, gave him Hall of Fame votes? Bill Miller?
No way.
Yes, wow. Bill Miller got 5 Hall of Fame votes.
That's insane.
Yeah, that makes me mad, dude. It really makes me mad because I take the history of baseball serious. Now, Bill Miller was a nice little player. Bill Miller wasn't even in the top 10 of talent on our team when he was on the Red Sox, okay? No, I mean, he's like a number 2 hitter. He's a nice little guy. I think he won one batting title. He's like a glorified utility guy, dude.
I'm gonna look that up if he even won a batting title. I know he did have.
He did. He did because he beat out Manny Ramirez for it. I remember it was him and Manny going for it. And they were both hitting like .333 going into the end of the season, and he ended up beating Manny out by like a point.
Wow.
Yeah, he won a batting title. But dude, can you believe that they gave him Hall of Fame votes? Now, don't you think the people that now the writers that have those votes should really be looked at? Like maybe they should lose their vote. I mean, what is that? A joke? Why? Because he gave you a good interview or something?
My whole guess here is why they did it is because those guys must be strictly totally against any player that used performance enhancing drugs and that's got
to
be the only
Bill
thing
Miller. Because I mean, come on, Bill Miller. I mean, you don't even remember he was ever on the team until somebody brings his friggin' name up.
I got him right now. His career statistics: 291 batting average, 85 home runs, 493 runs batted in. How does that even put him anywhere near that spectrum? We're talking the only guy I know that has less home runs.
He doesn't even have 100 home runs.
the only guy I think that has less home runs than that is maybe Ozzie Smith, and Ozzie Smith was a defensive genius. You know, and 291 batting average is good, but you know, there's guys that aren't in that have 290 batting averages lifetime and hit 400 home runs.
Yeah, dude, isn't that disrespectful to all those guys? I think it is, dude. I mean, I was really mad when I seen that. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, Bill Miller got 5 Hall of Fame votes? What?
Wow.
Bill Miller? And that's what, you know, some of these guys, I mean, they're old and senile. That's the way I look at it. Some of these baseball writers are these old, stubborn, set in their ways, senile, you know, just like your pitcher sitting around in the smoky room, you know, like, I don't know. They're just, it blows my mind, man. It blows my mind that people would do that. That's a disgrace to everybody that's in the Hall of Fame. Not that he's a bad guy. I mean, he's just not even worthy of even an all-star team, never mind Hall of Fame.
No, exactly. You know, he's a guy that only Red Sox fans should remember, to be honest. You know, like he's not. I mean, you know, for example, the guys that got in Barry Larkin and Ron Santo, you know, those guys, you know, their stats and their contributions to baseball in comparison to Bill Miller is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. Now, you know, What's your opinion on the guys from the steroid era getting in? I'll give you mine real quick. I think some guys, the numbers are just, they're too good, and you knew they would have been great baseball players anyway, so they're still going to get in. I think Clemens gets in. I think Bonds, this is who I think should get in. In my opinion, I think Clemens should get in. I think Bonds should get in. I think Sosa should not get in, and I think Maguire should not get in. And I just due to the fact that they're really one-dimensional compared to a Barry Bonds, and he was a really good player, and Roger Clemens was a really good player
already. How about Rafael Palmeiro?
I absolutely don't think he should ever be in, no. I never thought he was one of the best players in the league. Yeah, he put up some nice numbers, but you never thought, oh, Rafael Palmeiro is going to come here and kill him. No, come on.
But, I mean, as far as home runs goes,
no,
I think he's
now you got to have more than just the 500 home runs because you got to take that into effect. 500 home runs doesn't punch your ticket anymore. You got to have a lot more. Now, Barry Bonds has a lot more. But Sammy Sosa, no, he's not even a good contact hitter. He was nothing before his, you know, 60 home run seasons. So I don't think he should, and I think the same on Maguire. Yeah, he hit some home runs his rookie year. He really fell off for a long time. He was a low batting average.
I'm going to cut you off right there, and I think Maguire does belong.
Yeah.
I will draw the line after Maguire, and I'll agree with you about Palmeiro and the rest of them. But Maguire, I don't think he was – he was a consistent.
Dude, he had a lot of bad years with really low averages. I know in the end he kind of turned it up a little. And his rookie year, he was awesome, but there was a lot of in-between fluff that was.
Right.
I don't know. You know, he's definitely more worthy than Sosa and Palmeiro, I think. But I wouldn't put him in. I'd put Clemens in and I'd put Bonds in, but I wouldn't put him in. Now, when it comes down to it, I'd put A-Rod in. You know, there's just too many guys. You can't not put
these
guys
in. It's a slippery slope. It's hard to. Well, let's see. As far as it went with Maguire, his Oakland years, 49 homers, 32, 33, 39, 22, and then 42. And then he had a couple injury plagued years, 9 and 9. And then he had 39 and 52. And then he went to
But look at his averages too, Justin. He probably hit like 230, 240 a lot of those years, man. He struck out a lot. Yeah. He had a really low average. He's just home. You know, I don't know. I don't look at those guys that highly that do that.
I agree. Yeah, well, his lifetime batting average is 263. No, I agree. I mean, you know, and a lot of that got bumped by the end of his career.
Yeah.
When he was definitely 100% juicing. Yeah. You know, you look at, like, for example, the 70 and 65 home run years, you know, that's 135 home runs in 2 years. And then the next year in 2000, he had 32 home runs and 321 at bats.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Insane. That's like not even half a year's at bats.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, you know, in 2.5 years, you know, the guy hits more than most guys hit in their lifetime. But,
yeah.
You know, 40 home runs. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to say with some of these guys. Also, too, you got to look at what they've done in the postseason, I think, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That always, you know, of course, for a Hall of Fame, that absolutely figures in.
As far as him, what did he get? They won a World Series. They won two with Oakland. Did he win two or one?
One.
Okay, yeah. His postseason stats. He wasn't that great in the postseason either.
No.
217, 5 homers, in 129 at bats.
Yeah, I was never that impressed with him, man. He had those couple big Bonley years, and yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't put him in.
I don't know. It's hard to tell by who he's going against in what year too.
But now that you look at his numbers, you know what I'm saying. You're starting to think about it a little bit. I can hear it in your voice.
Oh no, I mean I do agree. You know that here's a guy that just did Montreal.
I agree. He's totally. I'm not saying he's an absolute. No, I mean he's borderline, and I wouldn't put him in. You know what I mean? It's absolutely.
Although,
it's close.
You know what? I'm gonna look up Rafael Palmeiro because here's a guy with a higher batting average, though.
Yeah.
Let me see that. Hold on. Okay. Yeah. Rafael Palmeiro. All right. For Rafael Palmeiro now. All right. All right. Here we go. His averages, on the other hand, were pretty good. He's a .288 lifetime batter. We'll just go down the line. 276, 307, 275, 319, 322, 268, and 295, 319, 310, 289, 254, 296, 324, 288, 273, 273. You know, I don't know. It's kind of hard. He hit 569 home runs. Over 1,800 RBIs, that's a hard call then, you know, because but the fact that he definitely did use steroids, I mean, they all did. It's hard to tell with the Roy guys.
Well, my thing is they were all doing roids. This is my way with Hall of Fame players is the best way to judge a Hall of Fame player in any era, in any generation, because it's too high. You judge him of how dominant he was against his peers. How nasty was he during his time against the other players? Was he by far the best player, or at least in the group of the absolute nastiest players, if there were a bunch of them at that time? If not, then I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think of, even though Rafael Palmeiro looks like he has good numbers, for some reason I just, you know, and I was around when he played, I just don't think of him as one of those guys, you know? I guess his numbers say that he is, though, but I don't know. You know what I'm saying, though?
No, I hear you. I mean, but here's the deal. Here's the guys they have him
those
ranked
are good,
among.
No, I can't argue with those numbers.
They have him ranked guys who he was similar. Veda Pinson, Dave Parker, Gil Hodges, Bobby Bonds, and Gabby Hart are all Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. Like you said, it's, you know, I do agree with you, you know, with what you said, though, about putting him up against his peers. However, longevity does play a part in it too.
Yeah, it does.
Here's a guy that had about 86 to 2005, 20 years in the league. You know, he did it for a long time. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. And then, but here's the thing: what happens? How many people would be pissed off if he made it in, and then McGuire didn't with 700 home runs?
Yeah, I don't know. People could be pissed, but he's got, you know, other stats too. It's not just about home runs, and I think it's especially not just about home runs when that's the one stat that's affected the most by the steroids. So I think the home runs loses its value more than any other stat when it used to hold more value. What do you think?
I agree with that, but I still think that it also, as far as it goes with home runs being, you know, Barry Bonds, some of the batting averages he put up late in his career, I think were very, very linked to his steroid use.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Because he had unbelievable hand speed coming through the box. You couldn't pitch the ball anywhere over the plate; he'd smash it out of the park. His bat speed was ridiculous. It wasn't just the power. How fast he would come through the zone with the bat was nobody ever did it like that. If you ever timed it, like when the ball got to the front of the plate and he started swinging the bat, it was so fast; it was like a machine. He was like a robot, dude.
We have four years in a row here. The one 2001, 328, 73 homers. Next year he hit 370 with 46 homers. Then he hits 341 with 45 homers, and then 362 with 45 homers. Wow.
And if there wasn't the scandal over his head, he could have gone another 2 years easy 40 home run years too.
Right. And those are the years at the end he had the one with five, but he was injury plagued, and then he had 26 and 28.
Yeah.
And he probably would have had, like you said, at least a couple more, at least 25 home run years. He would have had 800 home runs if he didn't have the scandal, I think. You know?
Yeah. It's crazy how much it changed the game.
Yeah, it really does. Now, all right, I got a question for you. Pete Rose, belong in the Hall? I think so. What do you think about Pete Rose?
Well, I know I've thought about this before. I've had talks about this, and with a short answer, yeah, I think he should be in. I think, you know, obviously the gambling's a big deal. If he wasn't really betting on his team, and I don't know how much you can trust that. You know, I hope he wasn't. Now, if we find out he was betting on his team and he, like, made his team lose to make money or anything like that, I absolutely think he should be banned from baseball forever. If that's the case. But if that's not the case, and he did so much as a player, and that is his one mistake while he was a manager, is he had a gambling problem, no, I don't think they should keep him out of the Hall of Fame.
We're talking about a guy with 4,500 hits, you know? It's
most
insane.
Hits ever.
Yep, I think that, you know, and the fact too that he finally went and apologized, you know, yeah, it goes a long way, but he wouldn't at first, you know. I think that you just got to chalk that one up and say, you know, hey, let's let him in. Here's the guy, Pete Rose, that he's done so much for baseball. Yes, he did gamble when he wasn't supposed to. He even gambled on baseball. I actually think about the guy that he's the type that would gamble on his own team though. Not against his own team. I'm saying that would gamble on his team to win. I don't know. It's really a tough call. But I think with him now here's the weird thing. Bartolo Giamatti is the reason why he'll never get in, because he ended up dying right after banning him, and right after that. I forget who the Faye Vincent put the life right after that. He made sure that he wasn't going to get in. What's weird is Giamatti is actually my grandfather's cousin. But really? To make a long story short, that pretty much sealed his fate. Was Bartolo Giamatti, dying so soon after the ban? I don't know. I think there's a guy though. He did too much for the game. Didn't cheat per se.
And he was such a hard player. Like, he played the way people should play baseball. I mean, that he was Charlie Hustle. I mean, you know?
Exactly.
I think he should be in, unless, you know, he bet against his team and threw games, obviously. I think he should be banned forever, but I don't think that's the case.
I don't think there's any evidence linking him to that either.
No, there's not. Definitely not.
Right, even the guys that came forward, the bookies and whatnot, I don't think they ever said that. So, you know, and here's people that want book deals and whatever else, and you know, so I think that, you know, for the most part, we got to give him the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right about that. Yeah, so, you know, we're probably going to wrap it up in about 10 minutes. So, you know, what else is there anything else you want to touch on before we, you know, sign off on our first show?
Yeah, I want to talk about a little bit about the Mets in this upcoming year. I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, again, we talked about it earlier, how tough it is, you know, being the Mets and coming out with such a low you know, salary and being, you know, we're in a tough division. Let's talk about them for a second here, but I don't know. What's weird about the Mets is they are capable of coming out this year and doing some things. Now, I just want to put the reasons on the table why, and for one, it's the fact that Ike Davis got hurt last year. I think Ike Davis is going to be a great player. Another thing too, they brought the fences in 7 to 9 feet, certain places around the park. I think they're going to have guys like Bay and Wright and Davis, Lucas Duda, are going to hit some home runs. And I think that for the most part, it's just going to be I think Sandy Alderson, you know, just having the whole new regime in there, I think it's going to be a little better. However, I wish we had Reyes and another pitcher, but also we get Santana back and we have a little better bullpen. My guess for the Mets is 500 at best, though. But, you know, if we could ever get Jason Bay to do what he did with not even what he did with the Red Sox, if we could just get him back to what he was doing with the Pirates, then we're talking about a totally different team here.
Why didn't they re-sign Reyes, man?
What's that?
Why'd they let Reyes go?
Because the Wilpons went and gave all their money to Bernie Madoff. That's bottom line.
Really? That's really what happened to them? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, they got ripped off by Madoff, and they tried hiding it for a couple of years, and it came out they lost a lot more than they said they did. Yeah, they were close friends of Madoff, and he ended up ripping them off. And that's why, to this day, we are going to be, for the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to be, you know, out of contention. And here's the thing. There's a guy that wants to buy the team and wants to spend. He's like a Mark Cuban type. And he's actually the minority owner. And he tried to buy it all out. And for some reason, I believe it was the commission, the owner's commission, wouldn't let him. For some reason, he wasn't allowed to. And, you know, it really makes you wonder there. You have a guy that's willing to come in and spend and come in and you know, give them what their team is worth and get rid of the Wilpon chapter. You know, there was another owner we had in the 70s that traded Tom Seaver. And, you know, in the Wilpons, I call them the Coupons, are really in the same situation there. You know, you have a guy like Reyes. He's a once-in-a-lifetime baseball player, and you don't even try to match that offer. You know, I think that's just an insult to your fans. But I don't know. I'm hoping for the best of the Mets and honestly preparing for the worst. Really, that's the, you know.
Well, it's depressing when you have a big market team and they're not going to spend to their capacity. I mean, it's almost absurd.
Yep. Yep. Watching all these guys go by. And you know what, too, Brian? You even see guys like Hiroki Kuroda. You know, there's some pitchers out there we could probably sign for $6 million or so. You know, a 2-year deal, $6 million a year, guys that have gotten it done before that we won't go out and sign. Yeah. You know, and we're going to rely on our top of the minor leagues, which isn't – we have a pretty good minor leagues, but most of it is still double-A talent. So, yeah. I don't know. It's very frustrating when you have these, you know, these certain things. And, of course, you're reminding me earlier when you brought up Roberto Alomar. What is going on with these Mets that come here, do great everywhere else, and come to the Mets and stink it up? I don't understand it. I never will. You have Roberto Alomar. You have Jason Bay.
A lot of them, they wait until they're kind of a little bit past their prime.
Well, yeah, but what about Jason Bay?
No, I know. I don't know. He was here.
Roberto Alomar wasn't that old when we got him. He was like 31. Yeah, he's past his prime. However, I still expect him to hit 280 with 12 home runs or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's I don't know if it's the culture of it or what, but it's something that needs to change. And I don't know, maybe City Field is the reason why David Wright hasn't been himself either the past couple of years. Yeah. A lot of strikeouts and whatnot. I don't know, but very frustrating being a Mets fan these days.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I think that'll pretty much wrap it up for tonight. I don't really have anything else. I think it was a good show. I can't wait to do another one.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know what? I did have one thing I wanted to touch on. I'll be honest with you. There is one thing I want to touch on. It's something probably 90% of the people that listen to this aren't going to be too interested in, but I did want to make a couple points about pro wrestling. And, you know, it's debatable whether it's a sport. It's not a sport. It's a stage show, just like anything else you watch on TV. But, you know, it intrigues me. It's athletes. A lot of people that like football like pro wrestling. I'm not going to sit here and do a wrestling review or anything, but I do want to do a couple quick points since it's the first show of things that I think that they really need to do to improve, because over the last 6 or 7 years, I mean, you can pretty much take it and flush it down the toilet. It's just bad television. They've done a lot of things wrong. And I just want to kind of go over some things that they could do that, you know, they could pretty much change overnight and make it just much better. One of the first things they need to do is end this stupid draft that they have on WWE. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but what they've done is when they bought out the WCW, They had so many wrestlers.
The Monday and the Thursday thing.
Exactly. Like, they split everybody up into two nights. Well, what that does is, say you like two or three wrestlers, but they're on Thursday night. Well, why the hell are you going to watch Monday?
Right.
And it's like that because there's not enough really good wrestlers to go around. And if like right now, the Friday show is the one that, you know, nobody even watches it because, you know, you know certain guys aren't going to show up. Now, there's another thing that they could do, and I hate this, is, you know, when you turn on wrestling, if you're a casual fan, and let's say Justin, for example, let's say you haven't watched it in years, and you go and turn it on, and you see some weak-ass guy with the belt, you're probably going to change the channel right away. I mean, that's what I would do. I think at all times, the champion, and you know, they pick the friggin' champions, okay? It's fake. Right. It's picked. I mean, at all times, the champion should be somebody that people would fear, whether it's a good guy or a bad guy. It shouldn't be
like Hulk Hogan and Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock.
Exactly, guy. Somebody credible, not some of these little puny guys that they throw it on to give them title runs now. And the other thing that they do is guys like Hulk Hogan. Okay, now you're talking about the most recognized wrestler of all time. Hulk Hogan was only a 6-time champion. He had long title runs. Guys don't have long title runs now. Right. The title goes back and forth. It means nothing. You might as well take it and throw it in the trash. You have these younger guys that have only been wrestling for 3 or 4 years, and they're like 11-time champions. And it's like, what? I mean, it's right. So stupid. And I mean, I don't know. It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts because they've made the belts mean absolutely nothing. And the other thing that I hate, and this is a business thing, and this is what the WWE really needs to do, because I feel in the digital age now, or whatever you want to call it, nobody is going to pay $50 for your pay-per-view, you dumbasses, okay? Nobody's shelling out $50 for their pay-per-view. And they still try and charge $50. Now, WrestleMania could go by. It could be a week later. They don't even, you know, they could do you a favor and try and at least make some sales and discount the price. They don't even discount it. It's still $50, okay? They could at least give it to you for like 15 or 20 so people would buy it. Here's the problem. They got too many pay-per-views. They got one every month. That means there's no importance to it anymore. Nobody cares. And it's true. Right. When there's one every month.
Here's the thing. When I was a kid, you had SummerSlam, you had Survivor Series, you had WrestleMania, and you had one other one.
Royal Rumble. And
Royal Rumble, right. Okay, you had those ones, and you knew them, and we would rent them, actually. And they were worth it. Now, you know.
Exactly.
And it, you know, for a year, and it was like $20 at the time, which was, you know, fitting to maybe 40 now. But you know, the fact of the matter was, you know, I don't know, a lot more people seem to be into it. And nowadays, I don't know. I mean, the kids are into it, but you know, to spend that much money is sick. I think you're right. It's and to have it have one every month, and you know what it is they have a monopoly on it now, so they can do what they want.
Well, that is that. See, the thing that killed the business is them buying out WCW, and they have no competition. Yep. So not only can they do whatever they want, they have nobody to push them creatively. They don't give a damn. They do the corniest things, the corniest storylines. But here's the thing: the business wise about the pay per view. WWE is launching a network, okay? Now, they think they're going to launch this thing in, like, April. It's not going to happen. They don't even have, like, a president for the friggin' network picked out yet. Nothing. They're going to be way behind. But anyways, here's what they need to do. Listen to me and tell me if this works. Obviously, we know they need to cut the pay-per-views down to bring the importance back to them. And then maybe people will pay the $50 at least for those ones, right? Okay. But besides doing that, see, what everybody's doing, Justin, and I'm not going to say that I'm doing it, but what everybody's doing is going to sites like, you know, Justin TV or these other sites where you can watch streaming things for free and then not paying the $50 for it. And the WWE is just losing all the sales. Now, when you're going to make this network, okay, what they should do is they should move the pay-per-views to the network. Yeah, you're not going to make the $50 on the pay-per-view, but only like 300,000 people are buying the damn things. So you move them to the network. You charge only, you know, you charge cheap. You charge like $10 for the subscription to the network on the cable system. But what that does is somebody like me that's a wrestling fan and wants to see the old wrestling programs they're going to put on, the other things they're going to put on, I'm going to pay for the subscription. And then at least you're getting money from me that way, and then I'm going to watch your pay-per-views. Because nobody's going to buy them anymore. If they don't drop the price to like $20, I mean, nobody, even if they do that, people might not buy them. They need to move them all to the network.
And here's the thing, you know what? And if they do want to do a $20 pay-per-view, make it available a week later. For the fans to watch.
Exactly, but see, the thing that's still wrong with that is the piracy. People are still going to steal it. So what you got to do is, it's clever. It's almost like, you know, them being clever is, if you move them to the network, it's going to stop somebody, let's say, not me, let's say one of my friends was going to pirate it, and it's going to stop him from pirating and stealing the pay-per-view, because he's going to get it anyways on the network. And he's not going to be able to say no to signing up to the network because he's a big wrestling fan.
Right.
That's what they need to do. I think they need to do a lot, because right now, me and one of my buddies, we watch the TNA wrestling. That's where Hogan is now. That's where Kurt Angle is. That's where a lot of the older guys are, and it's more for, like, adults. It's more kind of like how WCW was back in the day, but, you know, it's not as good. But it's decent. They got, like, Jeff Hardy. They got some stars over there. The WWE is, like, so cartoony. It's like they have some of the stupidest gimmicks. Oh, I mean, it's really just for the kids, and I understand. I mean, it's pro wrestling. At some point, it's got to be for the kids. But the thing with the belt really irks me. I mean, they've really made all their belts worthless. And the other thing is, you don't even have a clear champion. Since they did that draft, you have two different shows, and you have a champion for each show on everything, on a tag team level, on a heavyweight level, on an intercontinental type level. Well, you have two champions.
Let me ask you a quick question, Brian. They don't mix up and have like a couple like a Super Bowl of it, where you see the Mondays versus the Thursdays
sometimes they'll have two or three guys from the Friday come over to Monday and fight, but they never cross the titles over.
Oh wow,
it's wicked stupid. Here's the other thing: if you had to keep the draft, which is another thing I said, which I hate the draft, but let's say they're not going to change it, at least make one champion instead of two for everything, and have the champion have to defend on both shows. You know what I mean? You got to do something. You can't just let everybody know you're not going to see all these wrestlers on this show, because they're not going to watch, because neither show is worth it.
You know what else would be great too is to have the you know, like they used to back in the day, have one of those guys run out every now and then, and drop an elbow, and you know how it is when someone gets jumped all of a sudden, then that guy comes running out. You're like, who's that? And it's like, oh wow, it's Hogan coming to help out. You know, maybe they could do stuff like that too to get some people to watch the. But if they're not even showing up at all, or just showing up to give a stupid speech, then you're not going to watch it.
Yeah, it's retarded. That they've ruined it with the. I don't know why they ever had that draft. It was the stupidest idea. You have so many wrestlers. Why are you going to tell people what nights they're not going to show up? You know what I mean? Let's say they're doing it for reasons, for travel reasons, for rest reasons, so guys don't wrestle too many nights. Guys travel together with certain groups. You know, they make certain trips or whatever. You don't have to tell the fans, though. You could just do that behind the scenes, but still don't tell the fans what shows the guy's going to be on.
Right. And switch it up and be like, all right, well, for 3 months, you're going to be on this one, and then when this plot twist happens, now you're going to jump over and be on this one. Nothing's set in stone like it's an actual sport. You know, that's the thing. If you're going to have an entertainment type thing, then let it be entertainment. You know, don't try to model it after the NFL or anything else, or, you know, just go back to what got you there. You know, and that's I think what the problem with Vince McMahon over the years, and you know, obviously he's very successful. It's hard to criticize a guy like that, but, you know, besides the fact that how many wrestlers have died and everything else because of steroids and over wrestling and everything. But like you said, it's very easy. You just change it up every couple months, and, you know, a new plot twist, and now, you know, they change the plot every other day anyway, so do it within the both things.
Here's one of my last points I want to make is, here's another gripe of mine, okay? You have these wrestlers that are getting the crap beat out of them all the time, all right? They get, like you just said, wrestlers are dying. Wrestlers, they used to take tons of headshots with chairs. They don't do that anymore, but they do a lot of crazy things where they're getting really hurt all the time. Now, like I said earlier, guys, yeah, wrestling's fake. It's staged, but you know what it is? I mean, it's like real fighting. I mean, it's just, it's staged and choreographed. But they're hitting each other a lot. I mean, they're doing a lot of things where they can break bones, twist ligaments, all types of stuff like that. Here's my point, to try to get to my point. You have general managers of these shows that come out on TV, okay? And they get on the microphone, and they come out and announce the matches, and they're supposedly running the show and this and that. And they put the most boring personalities from backstage out there, and they put these guys. Now, why wouldn't you take a retired wrestler like Mick Foley or somebody like that that's given everything to the business, gotten his head cracked open so many times? Why don't you give him that little cushy job? Why isn't it always a retired superstar that's given a lot that people really like? Wouldn't you rather see Mick Foley or Stone Cold Steve Austin come out and be a general manager rather than one of these stiffs from the back with a three-piece suit on? I think it's kind of insulting, because that's an easy job you could give a wrestler, like having them be, you know, work with the play-by-play guy like they usually have a wrestler do, or, you know, have him be the general. I think the general manager should always be a wrestler, somebody that's done a lot for the business and, you know, it needs a break. Or even beyond that, you know, and he would never do this if Vince McMahon would just rest some of his top talent once in a while and give them like 3 months off, have them be the GM for 3 months, then have another superstar be the GM for 3 months, and have another one be the GM for 3 months or something. Like, give them a little bit of a break. Like, these guys, problem
kinda,
with wrestling.
Kind of like what MMA does, where you have, remember, you know, Tito Ortiz and, say, Chuck Liddell go and coach the other thing for a couple months or whatever. You know, or whatever
else. Yes, exactly. You know, yeah, exactly. I didn't even think of that, but exactly. Right. They're resting, but at the same time, you're using their personas in the spotlight because they're big stars. Why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you take somebody that's got a sore back, give them a couple months off, even like a year? Imagine one of these older wrestlers near their end of their career, like a Stone Cold Steve Austin or somebody, or a Hulk Hogan, and they get to just take a year to rest before they do get permanently injured. Be the GM for a year. You know what I mean? You give them like half their salary. Obviously, you don't pay them their full salary. You give them like half their salary, and they sit behind a desk the whole time, and they get to get some rest. I don't know. I think that's what they should do. It kind of aggravates me a lot. There's a lot of things that aggravate me about wrestling, because it used to be so awesome to watch. Every Monday night used to be must-see TV. I mean, it was the best show on TV by far. It was so awesome. And when Vince McMahon bought out the WCW, everything went to crap. But it got good again for a little while, and they had guys like Kurt Angle and The Rock, and what happened is Vince McMahon didn't want to pay these people, and he let his top all his top stars left. Brock Lesnar, Batista, like I said, Kurt Angle, The Rock, Stone Cold. I think Stone Cold left because he was hurt, but he had a lot of guys that just left over money, and because he didn't want to pay them what they were worth. Well, he didn't, right, with Kurt Angle. He didn't want to give Kurt Angle, you know, he's the guy that broke. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, Kurt Angle was the Olympic wrestler. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, and he broke his neck and all that. Well, you know, in wrestling, right, you know, they get hurt. He got addicted to painkillers, like a lot of them did. Right. And he actually approached Vince, okay, and told him, "Listen, I got a really bad problem with this now, and I need to go to rehab." And he just wanted to take like a month off to go to rehab, or 2 months off, and Vince wouldn't let him. That's why he left the company. Can you imagine that? What an ass,
that's
dude.
That's insane. Yeah.
After everything Vince has been put through, and the thing with the steroids and everything, and have your top talent come to you and tell you, I need rehab.
Let me tell you something, Brian. Oh, sorry to cut off a rant.
No, go ahead.
Vince McMahon is a scumbag in every sense of the word. Vince McMahon
really
is a total scumbag, and I wouldn't give a dollar to his organization.
He's got a huge ego. A big time ego. Totally. Like he's got a big problem, dude. He really does. And he is. I when I heard what really happened, I was appalled. I was like, what? So you have Kurt Angle, who at the time was his top star, or one of the top three stars. You know, he had a few really big stars at the time, and he's gonna walk because you're not gonna give him the time off, and that's why he went to TNA. And TNA is the wrestling I watch now, but it's just it's a much smaller company, and it doesn't have the you know the production like WWE, but doesn't have all the kiddie gimmicks. It's like WCW used to be. They just get out there and they let the talk go on in the ring. You know what I mean? And then it's got people you know like Sting, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair. They're all over there. Right. You know what I mean? Right. Maybe Vince doesn't realize it, but yeah, so at some point you gotta bring the farm system up. But he does it too early, man. He does it too much. He pushes too many young guys on TV, and he doesn't let the old guy. Like, yeah, you don't want to see 60-year-old guys to wrestle forever, but you do want to see Hulk Hogan and Sting and Ric Flair on TV.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. At least for you know for a half of you know just like these do with What was his name? Superstar Billy Graham?
Yep.
Well, yeah, you remember he would come out a little bit and he was like 50, 60 years old and, you know, every you know, and to have a little part in it or whatever, you know? It totally makes sense.
I'm going to show you a picture after when we're off the Skype. I want to show you of a couple of wrestlers. Right now, they have three champions that are all like they're barely bigger than me, dude. It's unbelievable these guys that they have as champion now: heavyweight champion, world heavyweight champion, which is the two stupid different belts, and then like the intercontinental champion. They're all these little guys. It's unbelievable.
See, the intercontinental should be like the middleweight type one. Yeah. That should be for the little guys.
Well, you should That's see the heavyweight champion. He's like 5'9", 180 pounds.
Wow, what was it like Rey Mysterio or something like that?
Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's his name, and the other guy is a CM Punk. He's got the other belt.
Okay, yeah, I know him. Yeah, my nephews are really into it. I bought them all the figures like last year. So this year I'm not as up on it. But yeah
that's what I'm
insane.
Saying about the guys. Got to be
you should have
you
guys
turn
like
it on and you see CM Punk or Daniel. Maybe CM Punk. I'm starting to buy into it a little bit. But this Daniel Bryan guy, dude, you turn it on. You see he's the heavyweight champ of the world. You want to turn it off right away.
Yeah. No. If anything, it should be guys like. Kevin Nash or the Giant or something
Always.
Like that. That.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a muscle-bound guy all the time. It could be a more athletic guy, a little smaller, but it's got to be somebody right. credible that looks like they can kick your ass. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Somebody that looks like they can kick your ass. I saw that you put in the chat that we could maybe interview a few. Who are these wrestlers that you know? I don't know if I know those guys.
Well, one guy is Bulldog Blansky. He actually, the last few years, he's been... he was actually a high school wrestling coach for me when I was a high school wrestler. He's on my Facebook. He knows all the pros. He's appeared in a couple WWE events, but he was just like the guy that would get, you know, beat up or whatever. But he was
that's cool, though.
He was big in TNA, though, and he actually was training all their girl wrestlers a year ago. But I just
they
ran
got
into
the
him
best
about
girls. Right. He's got a good job then, because right now the TNA girls are way hotter than the WWE girls. WWE got like two or three hot ones, but TNA got like eight of them.
Really? Well, he's been doing that. And another kid that I wrestled against in high school. Well, I didn't wrestle against him, but wrestled against the team. I believe he went by Mikey Batts. But either way, he what do you call it? He was in the I don't know if it was ECW. I think he was in the WWF for a while. I'll have to look it up. But anyway, his cousin is Kidman, and that's how he got in anyway.
But, that's a rough life to live, man. Those guys live a rough life, dude. And that's my other problem with it too, is you know, with the way that they take a beating and everything, and people don't realize, you know, yeah, it's a TV show. Those guys are on every week. Every other TV show is on for a couple months, and then it's reruns or it's off. Wrestling's on every week. Those guys are touring every week. A couple nights a week they're fighting.
Yep. Totally.
That's why their body gets beat down like that. And the steroid thing is just so rampant, and it's just been taking so many lives away. And from what I've heard, and I've listened to a lot of shoot interviews, and I've heard a lot of, you know, things that people really wouldn't say too much, like to the media, regular media, and... You know, people really say that Vince McMahon, if he likes you, he'll protect you. But if he don't like you, you'll be the guy that gets suspended. But if you're buddy-buddy with him, you'll never fail a test, you know?
Oh, really? Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. you'll never fail a test. But yeah, I mean, that's about all. I mean, my problem with pro wrestling is it really did used to be a good thing for guys to watch. It's not just like a little kid thing. There is a lot of, you know, it's entertainment. You know, it's like a soap opera for guys. It's got action. It's got people that actually do their own stunts. That's all it is. You know, it's a drama where people do their own stunts exactly. And they do a lot of stunts.
Hey, you know what? No different than watching the GOP convention in my eyes.
No, it's not. They're not any different, you know, actors and everything. It's all the same, you know. Yeah, I mean, it really is just like politics, too. You know, what somebody told me, too, is that Vince Russo actually writes a lot of the political headlines in this country. And he's the guy that used to be the head writer for WWE, and he writes for TNA. That's funny.
Well, you know, it's crazy. Look at Linda McMahon. It shows right there. She, you know, there's a politician. Same thing, you know.
And Jesse was a wrestler and a politician. Yep. It's all the same. Those guys act like they're enemies, but they're really buddies. Just like wrestlers. When the wrestling's over and they're in the locker room, they're all buddies and they're all in on it together. But yeah, that's pretty much all I wanted to say about wrestling. It kind of makes me mad because it's not a lack of talent. It's the way they're using it, the way they're running it. It's managed so poorly, and it's just it's aggravating. It's got to the point where there's been years or two where I just can't watch it. In the last few months, I've been watching again. In the last couple months, I've been even trying to watch WWE, which I don't usually do. I just watch TNA, and it's been getting a little better, but it's still, you know, they need to do a lot of things. And I don't know, you know, I don't know. They make a lot of mistakes, and it aggravates me. But that's all I want to say about that for tonight. I don't want to spend too long on it. We've gone way over. Yeah, I mean, pretty much, I don't know, maybe we should do another show after the football games or something. Not, you know, right after, but like the next day or something. Or if you want to do one before, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, no, sounds good to me.
All right, but yeah, thanks for coming on with me tonight. Everybody, you've been listening to the Real News Online Sports Radio. We haven't come up with a title for the show yet, but we will, you know, before the next one or whatever. For Justin Cook, I'm Brian Stavely. We want to thank all of you for tuning in. If you missed the start of the show, guys, okay, I'm going to put it up on the site, therealnewsonline.com. I'll put the archive up there. You'll see it. There's a radio and TV archive section. You can't miss it. And I'll put this show right at the top of it. And I'm going to have it in a file, and me and Justin will be sharing it everywhere, I'm sure. But, yeah, thanks, everybody, for listening. And that's pretty much all. We're out of here.
Thanks, guys. Peace.